on today's Compassion Radio.
We do see influence and cultures coming together. Middle Eastern influence with business, Asian influence with industry and roads and infrastructure. The average citizen of the country where I live is probably buying used clothes from India on a phone made in China. They are listening to music from America and playing an instrument from their hometown. Yet I can go to the bush and be the first white person that they've ever seen in their lives. So that's interesting too.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Daily Journal of Kingdom Workers and the Kingdom they serve in every kingdom or republic on Earth. We're glad to have you along with us today. If you're old enough, you might remember what a big deal it was to receive a postcard from a friend overseas. Maybe a mailgram letter written on onion-skinned paper and stamped in a country halfway across the globe. If you were lucky, that flimsy letter-envelope combination or picture of some strange scenery would reach you in a week or two. Probably after your friend or family had already returned from their big adventure. My, how times have changed. And today's guest is a prime example on how far we've come in global opportunity and communications. At the same time, the things that have kept people separated for millennia seem to remain stubbornly ingrained in outdated and often corrupt systems. We have the technology now to heal most major diseases. We raise enough food to feed 8 billion people every day. We can physically put a human on any spot on Earth in less than 24 hours. And yet, it still seems like we can't make headway on major metrics of human flourishing, health, and welfare. Thankfully, people like you'll hear today are very willing to live a very modern version of a missional life in very remote places. They face with great courage, faith, and joy the stubborn corruption, resistance to human rights, freedom of conscience and faith that still infect a majority of our world. And we'll start hearing that story today from these remote places with the latest technology available. Friends, there's never been a better time to be alive and active in the kingdom of God than right now. And you can be part of it. And now, to the interview. On Compassion Radio today, we'll introduce you to a new friend, which I do hope becomes a consistent friend to the ministry here, because we need to know a lot about what God's doing in certain, as we say, dark corners of the globe. Not dark because they're hidden or evil or whatever. They're places that are just not seen by us, and when we put our eyes on it, we become much more aware and they come alive to us. We also have to be kind of circumspect here. So, Carly, in the deepest, darkest parts of Africa, welcome to Compassion Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the reason we're not talking specifically about the country you're in is because you're doing some sensitive work, and both you and your husband are visibly present in the countries you're currently working in. And there are some sensitivities there, and trying to be extra sensitive to the friends you've made, probably in the government as well as just within the community. You don't want to put them in danger for being the kind of people that are perceived wrongly by some militant group. So explain, first of all, what's it like living in Africa? Then we'll talk about how you got there.
Sure. Well, I think people have a lot of different ideas when they think about what it looks like to live in Africa. I know when I first moved here, my mom just immediately thought that I was going to be kidnapped and shot probably. And so I think people just think about Blood Diamond and everybody running around with guns, shooting each other and just violence and everyone's poor. And it's just this horrible apocalyptic place. I think that that's a really sad representation of Africa because Africa's huge and there's these countries and they're all so different and there's so much going on in each of them, so much culture and beauty. Yeah, so for us, like, I think there's some things about our life that fall into some of those stereotypes, like we don't have power often, or like our water will get turned off, or there will be military tension and we'll have to stay inside. Roads will be closed because there's rebels coming across the border or something like that. And then there's things that seem strange. Like I go to the sauna a lot here. Like that's something I love to do here. I love going to the sauna and we love going to the pool and we go and have happy hour with our friends at a German winery near my house. And like, it's stuff like that, you know, in some ways our life looks normal and in other ways it's far from it.
Well, you're on the continent there that, of course, we have to geographically place you in a way that makes sense to us.
Sure.
Africa itself as a continent is about as big as North and South America combined. So it's, it's not a small place, or because it occupies the equatorial regions of our maps, it looks a lot smaller in comparison to where you and I come from. And you are an American by birth. But it's also a collection of many, many countries. Some of them are huge, as big as almost as big as China, or even the lower 48 of the U.S. But there are many small countries that are kind of shoehorned in between all these, and some of them are broken down by tribal identities and things. But a lot of them, including the countries you're familiar with, were carved up because of colonial ambitions.
For sure, yeah.
And so they would probably not have been their own countries after the breakup of the colonial system of the 20th century had they not been already carved up like that. It had some history and had some infrastructure that the colonialists left behind. So do you see this as being something that is going to be fairly permanent, like the identities of the people you work with are going to be locked into their national identities? Or is there kind of a pan-cultural thing happening where people groups are reconnecting now like they haven't been able to for hundreds of years and discussing new ways of organizing?
That's a good question. I don't see the country I'm in like having the boundary lines of the country changed. That seems very unlikely. There might be some small border skirmishes here and there, but that seems pretty locked in. As far as the cultural identity of the country, you know, there's various tribes in the country that I live in, and there's tension sometimes between those tribes. There's a lot of, I think, especially in the older generations, there's a lot of identity in being tribe A or being tribe B. I think that's becoming less and less as younger generations are marrying each other and becoming more globalized, and they all have Instagram. And that seems like the younger generation is maybe less, oh, I'm a tribe A, you know, that's my identity. We don't really see that too much, especially not in cities, rural maybe more. But I think it just everyone, you can go up into the bush and you can find people living in a hut, but they have a smartphone with Facebook and they see the whole world. So I think that is bringing people together.
Well, give me a couple minutes on the issue of globalization, what it means for Africans near where you live. When we think of globalization, we think about people trying to become like us. I know it's it's usually a very self-centered thing when we think about globalization in an American context. It's about economics, about politics, it's about power. And as far as we're concerned, for the most part, black hole is what we see Africa to be. It's where black people come from. It's the place I don't want to go. So it's just not in our consciousness to say that Africa itself is a varied and dynamic and growing and has the most potential economically of all the continents right now. But what is it like for the people that are there? You talk about being in a hut in the middle of the bush at the top of the hills in the rainforest, probably close to some gorillas or something, and still having a Facebook in their hands. So what does globalization mean for somebody, let's say this, in their teens or 20s now?
Wow. Yeah, I can speak at least for the country where I'm in. I have so many countries, it's hard to say what that means for everyone. But for the country that I'm in.
So you're the one representative for the entire continent. So get this right.
Please, please, no one think that. We've lived here off and on 13 years. So that's not nothing, but that's not forever either. You can't buy new clothes here. So the used clothes are usually coming from India. Tons of connections with India, Pakistan, Oman, lots of business here happening. So those relationships, from my understanding in the countries I've been to, if you go to most African countries, there's like a district within the city that's very Indian, Pakistani, and they're running businesses and bringing in imports and whatever. So I think there's a huge influence of those two cultures on each other.
Yeah, it seems like the Western cultures were very busy doing imperialism in the traditional sense of commanding order and imposing rule on land, and from there building out their economic models. It seems like most of South Asia, the Vietnams, even Laos and the Cambodia being part of this whole system, and China, of course, in India, are they're economically imperialist, but they're not necessarily about territory yet.
Yes, that's true. I just finished reading the book Cobalt Red. Big shout out by Siddhartha Kara on the cobalt trade in Congo. And just a really interesting read, especially how the Chinese, what colonialization looks like for them. You're right. They're not really interested in taking over countries for land, but they are very interested in mineral resources. And even in the country I'm in, you know, they have sort of these deals where they'll build roads in exchange for rights to minerals or whatever. So at least here we do see influence and cultures coming together when it comes to, that sort of Middle Eastern influence with business. We see the Asian influence with industry and roads and infrastructure. The average citizen of the country where I live is probably buying used clothes from India on a phone made in China. They are listening to music from America and they're playing an instrument from their hometown. But yet I can go to the bush and be the first white person that they've ever seen in their lives. So That's interesting too.
So the touch
I don't know if
points
that answers your
then,
question.
no, it does. It helps a lot. So the touch points for internationalism are mostly digital right now. There's not as many physical people coming through, changing up a culture and having face-to-face meetings yet, but it's beginning a bit. The country's kind of opening up now, from what I understand.
Yeah, and I would say the impact on of charity and like NGOs are huge in various African countries, and that both positively and negatively. So I work with two different communities. The organization I work for works with two different local communities, one of which is in the city and one is more rural. The one in the city is in a very heavily like NGO'd area, and the influence there is, I mean, it's changed the whole culture. I mean, you had a for the worse, it's not great. It's really hard to motivate. Like, the organization I work for is kind of all about empowering change and sustainability and people having dignity to do things for themselves. But because of this heavy white savory come in and just give handouts, that whole thing, it's created a whole culture of people who are like, why should I need to work for my food? You can just give it to me. Or, you know, this, if I just go to this other organization, they're not going to make me take business training. They'll just give me what I want. So it's actually both positive and negative influence, but aid has a pretty huge impact on shifting cultures, that's for sure.
We'll be back with more right after this. And if you don't mind me saying so now, I hope this short message will stick with you as well. For you are essential to the mission of Compassion Radio. We truly cannot do it without you. Compassion Radio has been committed to bringing you the truth about what God is really doing in the world and how He is bringing about the salvation, redemption, life, and growth of His kingdom wherever it is to be found. So much has changed and is changing in this world. At the same time, I'm discovering in a deeper way how absolutely consistent God is in times of trial. So I'll ask you, will you help? Just call today with your first gift and consider making it monthly. Call us 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. If you're on the move right now, you can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to make your gift immediately. God bless you. And now, back to our discussion.
Aid has a pretty huge impact on shifting cultures, that's for sure.
Well, I think that the international aid regime, which you are in the face of all the time there.
Yeah.
We have seen it especially in the global south. There's a sense that the providing nations through the UN mechanisms are expecting a governmental institution of a culture of reception that understands the culture of the giver. But they don't necessarily have a culture in their countries that understands the relationship between power and empowerment. So they create a dependency. And since there are so many countries that have lived throughout all of history with kind of a kingdom mentality, let's put it that way, there's always a chief or some potentate that actually rules and reigns and makes the law, and that all of order is embodied in a person, that's a very ancient way of viewing structure of society and even access to spiritual things. You know, someone has to interpret for you what God in heaven might say. It's all integrated vertically, is what it seems to be in those ancient cultures. And then you come in with these multinationals that are actually working in different political systems, and they expect the country they're interacting with to have a political system of their own, which they may not. And then they've got to figure out how do we actually get them to where our renaissances, our industry, our industrial revolutions have brought our nations to. And we tend to expect them just to be there for us and understand what we've gone through and how we've arrived at this point of wealth.
That's exactly true. Yeah, we kind of try to copy and paste our own story onto other nations, and I don't know that it's effective. I mean, it certainly isn't working where I live.
Well, what is working? Tell me what things have actually transformed positively or economically. Is there more empowerment happening? Is there more education yet? Are people figuring out entrepreneurialism on their own because of the things they've been mentored on the internet? What kind of stuff is happening that's good?
A good question. The country I'm in, it ranks top 10 poorest countries in the world. So that aspect of the country, like, I mean, it falls far below most other countries that I could, even neighboring countries I can point to and say, well, at least they have a light at their four-way stop that people follow, like stuff like that. But let me think. I shouldn't have to think that hard, but it is actually challenging to think about what is working. This is probably something that hasn't changed, but is something that's always true about the country that I live in, is the way that the community tends to come together and work together for a common good is always so surprising to me. For example, today I was out in one of our communities and we've been working very diligently to get a well drilled in this community. And it's we've hit corruption and we've hit political tension and we've hit supplies not making it across the border and just like thing after thing after thing trying to get this thing done. And today, after like almost a year, we're finally breaking ground on this well, which is
Yay.
just amazing. Praise God.
So people I know back here in the States are probably excited about that too.
Yes. But what was so cool is that the organization that we partner with for the well requires that the community dig the trenches for the piping. And it's miles of trenches. Like it's in the and it's almost dry season where I am, so the ground is hard and dry and ugh. And I was like, how are they gonna do this? The community has to own it to in order to get the well, they have to dig the trenches themselves, which I get. I think that's good for some ownership. But I was so amazed when I went out there today that the whole community was out there with their pitch axes and doing it together. And I was watching how they were doing it. Like, this is so far they have to do this. And how are they managing to do this without discouragement and exhaustion? And it's hot. And some of them have babies on their backs. And just how is this happening? And they described to me how one person doesn't look at the whole thing and say, oh, I have to do that. But each person gets a, 1 meter for the day. They have to do their 1 meter and they have a buddy and they do a bit and they do a bit and they change and they take turns and together it's done. And I think it's a really good picture of the way that, from my experience, Africa in general, but specifically the country I'm in, just has this beautiful camaraderie with seeing the communal nature of cultures. I think that's something that this country has going for it is, they've been through war and they've been through horrible tragedy after tragedy after tragedy, but they still seem, they're just so resilient. I'm just so amazed at their resiliency. So I think that's a character that this culture has that is going for it. But as far as globalization, I can say Starlink came to this country this last year, which was so cool, revolutionized connection. There's only a percentage of people who can afford to have it, but still, it's here.
Is that how you and I are talking right now?
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do this if we didn't have Starlink. My work day, I work a remote job for an American company, and it usually takes me maybe 5 hours to do my job. It was taking me 12 hours to do my job on the local internet a day. So yeah, so that's a big thing. Like Starlink coming is cool. That's great. You're seeing, yeah, different businesses starting up, people that haven't been in the country that I'm currently in. It's interesting to ask this question now, because this particular season of this country, there was a few years ago where this country was really doing well. People were international, people were moving here and businesses were being started and roads were getting fixed. And it just really seemed like a golden era. Like it was just improving, 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 improving. And then there was an attempted coup and everything just crashed and it has just gone down and down and down and down. And all of that fell apart and the roads fell back apart and the people who were starting businesses left. I mean, I live in an apartment building with 10 apartments and all but one family have left in the last 2 years because they just can't do business here anymore because it's too difficult. Man, I mean, 6 years ago, I would have said, look at all this exciting stuff that's going on. And now it's like, well,
I remember what a heartbreak it was for folks that had high expectations and hopes for South Sudan when Juba was in its renaissance, and North Africa, the West, Central Asia were sending a huge amount of money to just to develop the country and especially the capital city. And then it took all of 5 years for it to collapse again into a civil war right there on the streets in the middle of the construction projects.
Yes, you're right.
And talking about a destruction too, not just about property, but about systems, trust. So people that would have been the ones to go out there, fix the roads, the potholes, they can't trust they actually have a job anymore, that they're not going to be required to pay some kind of bribe in order to keep their jobs. People just walk away.
Yeah.
So how do you get them to walk back to the wall and say, we're going to build it again?
Someone with a PhD needs to answer that question, I think.
Well, you have a real life PhD from where you're living.
A PhD of experience, maybe. I don't know. I think change is slow. Working here, we've learned is one step forward, 10 steps backwards. And you just know that going into it. Nothing happens fast. Well, the fall apart happens fast, but the rebuilding happens slow. I meet different people who've lived and worked here for decades. And I think it's more often than not people who've lived here for decades and have really worked at it I think about 60% of them, 70% of them are just really cynical and hard. But there's about 30% that have managed to maintain their joy and hope and optimism and just continue to just believe that this country can improve. And despite the corruption and despite the setbacks, they're still committed. I like to study those people, and just because I want to be one of those people, you know, when I once I've been here for decades, how do I avoid becoming, you know, just a broken cynic? And it's not because, you know, that 30%'s been lied to less or taken advantage of less or scammed less. They've all experienced the same exact thing. But it seems like the people that keep a soft heart, they just focus on the individuals in front of them. You know, like even if the whole country's falling apart, it's, yeah, but that guy down the street, I see him every day and like we're working on something. Or that friend I have, like I've seen change there. Like, and they've lived here long enough that they have seen the rise and fall of challenges. And if you wait long enough, barriers do come down. Just be patient and keep your eyes on what is unseen, not what is seen, right? I think I go back to that verse a lot.
Well, from the spiritual perspective, absolutely. It seems to me that most of the younger nations, and I would say that your nation is young in many ways, because there's a number of decades since colonial rule, oversight, or it's the colonial influence of the countries around it. So it doesn't see itself, I think, as a mature country. But it seems like the younger countries that I've been to as I've traveled, they have this naive expectation that if we just do what the countries I admire are doing, it'll be okay. And then they don't see the fall coming because they don't realize that there's corruption that does go around the world in many places. And then their heroes fall and they have less faith in the system.
Interesting.
And then they have people that rise up and say, well, I will fix this thing here because I'm the one,
Interesting.
I'm the savior. And then people fall for that. So they go from one naivety to another. And then the cynicism grows on many levels, the poorest of the poor
Right.
to the richest of the rich.
Yeah.
So I pray every time I think about you and the country you're in that God will keep providing ways for that dignity of work and the, as we would say, what's made the American system actually successful was guaranteeing property rights and basic rule of law. And if not the practice, at least the promise of one system being fair to all.
Land laws. My husband studied land specifically here for his graduate studies, and land is the most contested. It's like 95% of court cases, especially in like an agrarian society. Land is life. But there isn't that. There isn't confidence that this land, if I buy it, it's going to be mine. Because, you know, we know multiple people who bought land and then somebody else bought the same land and the person took both their money and bounced, and now there's two deeds and who owns it? Like it happens all the time. And like due process, I mean, if you speak out, you disappear. So like, what is that? There's not justice.
So that's the big fears right there. Of course, America's right now, as you know, going through this sense of we need order, and some saying, well, in order to have order, we have to get rid of due process, which
Yeah.
is a total oxymoron to me.
Yes, it is 100%.
So I'm praying we don't fall for a false savior mentality either
Absolutely.
by systems or people that we assume are going to bring the order that we crave. So there is something about we, the people, saying this is who we are and we're going to work together to be a more perfect union. And your ditch digging metaphor and reality there in your country is for me based on the simple biblical knowledge of you got the square foot. This is where I'm assigning you to stand. And you choose to say yes, to step in and be the one that's going to be the first to swing the pick. And you got your buddy with you. And between the two of you, you'll pace yourself. You'll find a way to have someone to help you through what you got to get through. You'll help them get through what they got to get through. And then that will multiply up the chain so that the country has that same ethic. And I do believe it's a spiritual principle. So I would think the way you're digging your wells seems to me to be the best way to build a nation.
In fact, I was kind of working on a bit of a newsletter blog today, sort of workshopping that metaphor because I think it's super powerful. You know the direction we're going. We know the direction we're laying pipe. We know the direction of the tank, and we got to pick. And the ground's really hard, but we're doing it together. And we might have to get rid of a lot of stones, but we know the direction we're going. But you can't fix your eyes on that direction 2 miles away. You'll get so discouraged. So just like one thing at a time.
We'll be back with our guest Carly on following programs. I hope you'll tune in then for the rest of the story, or that you'll catch the podcast at our website, compassionradio.com.
Sun and moon will be replaced with the light of Jesus' face, and I will not be
Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.